review in Victoria, and I brought Molly Peacock from Toronto to Victoria to talk about poetry, the relationship between poetry and creative nonfiction, and because it was the university, they wanted to get their money's worth out of bringing her. And so I arranged for her to go into a second year poetry class, and because I put all this effort into bringing her, I went with her. And not knowing she was going to give a seminar on how to write a sonnet. And so she did. My favorite part of it is, you know, everyone was sitting around, you know, tables, but there was a big well in the middle, and she said to these second year students, "Think of the poem as like unrolling your yoga mat line by line." And, you know, don't imagine, you know, if you get to 14, that's great, but if you get to 12, that's okay. Don't go past 15 lines or 16 lines. Anyway, then I had to write a poem. Like everyone was writing, wrote a poem. I had to borrow a pen and paper, and I wrote a sonnet in half an hour. And I hadn't been writing very much, and so then I started writing sonnets. I've now written 509.
Oh, my gosh.
I heard somebody made the mistake of telling me, well, first of all, I happened to make the mistake of saying to someone, you know, a sonnet is 140 syllables. And they said, well, why do you write 140 sonnets? Okay. And then I heard that Petrarch wrote 366. So I was applying to Canada Council for a grant. I thought, okay, I'm going to write 366 sonnets, thinking that they would not even dignify this with anything, and they gave me a grant, much to my shock. And then somebody, it was Ross Lucky, who's the editor, at that time was editor of the Fillhead, he said, you know, Wordsworth wrote 523. So now I'm getting close. To me, it's an opportunity, not a limitation. And I find the form, observing the rules. I have this line. I just discovered it's two syllables too long. I have to find a way of trimming it down. And so that's just where thesauri come in handy. And so I look up a word, find another word, but it's got a slightly different meaning. So then it pushes me deeper in. And that's same with the rhyme. So I see it as an investigative tool. And I also wanted to learn how to write a shorter poem. 14 lines is a short poem. So I have one other book. I've got a book of sonnets that I published 5 years ago. But I guess there'll be another one. Anyways.
Do you stick really rigidly to the rule?
I do. I'm not iambic, though I think English is pretty iambic.
Yes.
But I don't adhere to that. But I don't do full rhyme. I do half rhyme, mm-hmm. slant rhyme, you know, pretend rhyme, sight rhyme. And I do count this. I keep to the 140.
Right. I'm just going to ask you about psych rhyme. Is that talk about that?
Well, let's see. I mean, it's not the best example, but like wind and wind. Mm-hmm. But that's not really the really good one. But yeah, they look the same, but they sound differently.
In English, we might say that.
Yeah, yeah.
I went right to neuroses and psych wine.
Yeah. But anyway, I just have found it to be
sight.
Sight. That's good. That's good. Well, we'll try that.
Write a poem with psych rhyme.
I'm going to try it.
Yeah,
let's
yeah.
do a sonnet with psych.
Yeah. 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 Yes.
Yeah, bear with me. This might be a long walk.
That's fine.
But Richard Sykin just re-released his book Crush after 20 years.
Oh, yeah.
And in the afterword, he mentions how in 2005 he wrote a book about the aftermath of AIDS, but as the internet age arose and people's relationship with media occurred, it became about vampires to people instead. In that, you just read some old work and, like, recited a bunch of pieces about like changing times and world events. How has your relationship with your own work changed in the years?
Oh. That's a really hard question, which is fine. Some of it carries forward, and some of it you don't think about very much. You go back to it and it surprises you. Like, I guess a really good example, I wrote this book of poems about Emily Carr, the West Coast painter. I started it when I was in undergraduate university, like in the writing program. And it's come out in three different editions between 1987 and 2006. I would say my relationship with her is a lifelong investigation. However, of course, our ideas about appropriation, because of course she painted images of the totem poles. She had her own particular idea of what was going on at the time. You know, I mean, it was a very, when she met the Group of Seven in 1927, it was when the potlatch was illegalized. And so I've become increasingly uncomfortable with the poems I've written about the totem poles, because I think maybe I didn't write them with enough knowledge and respect. And I keep wanting to go back to those poems and rewrite them, and maybe work with an Indigenous writer just to, to be mentored. But, you know, that book was very important to me. So I think of it as my, like, that was the end of my apprenticeship. But, and I also think if Carr were alive today, she would be an activist. She would be an environmental activist. She would be, she would be protesting with Indigenous people about the expansion of the pipelines, all those things. I even think maybe she might have been non-binary.
Yeah.
All those things, you know. But she lived in her own time, and she had her own feelings about what was going on. I mean, one of the things she wanted to do with many of her paintings, early paintings, she painted people into them, because she thought that it would help give more presence to the work, like Indigenous people. So that preoccupies me, if that helps answer the question.
It's great.
What about you, Eric?
Yeah. Oh, I'm fine. How are you?
about the poems.
I feel so like, I was just going through Icon Driven, so like, damn, I gotta rewrite that. That's awful. I read a lot of history, and it's just so consistent that you're stuck where you are. You know, like your community shapes so much of what you are able to see, and what you're able to conceive of doing. And if you are truly an outsider, boy, that's being outside is really hard. And much has changed. Somehow the idea came into my head when I was 16. It's like, well, I know I can't fix cars. I can't play baseball with a dam. What can I? For some reason, I said, like, poems. I can write poems. And I started doing it. That was like in the USA in the 1960s. And that was like nothing like what we can see here now. It was so different. Sex between men was illegal. You could either, they could institutionalize you, because you're crazy, or they could put you in jail. Right?
And both.
Both, yeah. It was just, so what you are constrained by is always there, but you don't see it until you're somewhere else. Yeah. And you look back and you're like, wow, I lived through that. But then you can't, like, do you go back and change? Do you go back and fix that poem? Because then it would be untrue to that moment.
You can't fix it, but I think you could write back to it, right? Like, I think you could have a conversation with yourself.
You could, yeah, and that would be interesting.
I mean, maybe that's one of the gifts of being old. Like, I agree, like, when I look back at being a young queer person, how scary that was, right? At times, right? Like, people bringing Rottweilers to pride parades instead of their children and applauding when you walk past, or while we throw out candies or something. Like, things have changed, right? Like, from the 8-hour parade to the scary parade, but you went. So, I mean, there is a way to talk back to your younger self, I think. That would be interesting. To almost look at them together. I think about that sometimes, you know. How you could talk back to your younger self.
I hope that was an answer.
It was.
So I just thought of another question. Because I think I've known both of you possibly 20-ish years.
Yeah.
And I think I met John because Eric invited John for a reading. So one of the things I notice in the arts is that people are often in like artworks of whatever medium they are in conversation with other artworks. And since you're both here together, I'm just wondering about your relationship as colleagues, as friends, professionally as poets. You know, is there a... And in fact, even the subject matter of today's readings, there was a parallelism that I found, you know, heartwarming. So I wonder if you could comment about your relationship to each other.
Are you trying to stir up trouble?
You first.
The way I remember first, I think I contacted John before actually meeting him in person. And what I remember is, in the 80s and the 90s, there were these Kingston Men's Conferences, and they're very progressive, and, you know, we're like, you know, anti-racism, you know, pro-feminism, we're going to fix everything in the world. We didn't. Just, you know.
Fix men, right?
Yeah. Spoiler alert, we didn't fix the world. I was in a very small way one of the people organizing those, and I said, like, we should invite this guy John Barton. So, and they said yes, so I invited him, and then, and at the time I was living in Matt Kervin's basement, and so this guy drives up in his car, and I get out, it's got to be John. It's like, and I look on the dashboard, and there's a Patti Smith album.
Oh, really?
On the dashboard. It was, yeah.
Okay.
And it's like, I think we're gonna like this guy.
Yeah.
It was the 1980s. Dream of Life?
Dream of Life, yes.
Yeah. People have the power.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a friendship.
Yeah.
More than anything else. And we talk about writing. We talk about the writers that we read.
Yeah.
Eric has been very generous. Well, I've arranged this reading. And I've read in Kingston many times because of Eric, which is great. I think we've supported each other's work.
Yeah. But yeah, that's been very valuable.
Poems about each other.
No.
Nah.
No. 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 Yeah, spoiler alert, no. Yeah. Yeah. No eulogies yet.
You got to be careful with that stuff. Speaking of poems that you might regret later.
Yeah, right. Right.
So don't write too much about the people, you know.
Or disguise it.
Or disguise it, yes, yes. Yeah.
But that would turn us into fiction.
It's a sort of compound character, actually. I don't know what that's like.
Right, right. All the best qualities of Eric are in this poem.
Do you read each other's drafts?
Well, I've looked at some of yours, haven't I?
Yeah.
I'm selfish. I don't do that.
Well, John's a great editor, you know. You don't do, like, the Battle Hat for 14 years and... the essential Dirk Winand and the essential Douglas LePage,
right.
and Seminole,
right.
The anthology Seminole, and yeah, so yeah, he's a handy guy.
Yeah,
if you need an editor.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah. I won't say anything more, but yeah.
Sorry?
I won't say anything more, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good.
Yes.
So, I'm a baby poet, and can you riff a bit on the publishing industry?
Well, this is one of those things we talk about.
It's not as easy to do anymore because magazines are different in the sense that they're overwhelmed with submissions. But when I I've submitted a lot because I edited two literary journals, I value submissions, you know, and sending work. And so when I got a submission of poems back, and say it was all rejected, I would send it out within 24 hours to another magazine. And it kind of, I always thought of it as it's like hot potato. It's no longer my responsibility if I send it to someone else. And it just, it taught me to be, if not exactly develop a thick skin, but it took the sting away of rejection. And so but really what I'm saying is I was committed to my work and sending it out. And I two stories. One time I accidentally sent the exact same submission to the same magazine and that had been rejected, and the second time through they took three of the poems. So there may have been a change in editor, I don't know, I can't remember that. And then another time, a friend of mine happened to be visiting me when a submission came back from, well, I'll say which magazine, the Capilano Review. And I was disappointed. And we were talking about the submission. And she said, well, you should send it right back with that explanation about what the poem was about and change the title to what I described it as being. It's sort of like, all that enters must pass through love, death, and the decline of the nation state. I think that was kind of the name of the poem. And the second time, they took it. So, I really think the key is dedication. And I think that the message I got, this is about taste, and not necessarily about quality. And I think that's really important to remember. And sometimes, I know this because I edited magazines, you've already published 30 poems on X subject. You're not going to, okay, I think we're boring the reader here, so I'm not going to take another one of these. And the other thing I would say, if anyone gives you any comments on your poems, that's a triumph. Because so many poems, especially now, so many poems or stories that no one has time. So if someone says something good, especially good, take it to heart.
Yeah. I second that.
Yeah.
But I will also add that I, for a long time, I felt like I wasn't getting anywhere. But my friend up in Tamworth Way, Jeannie Harrison, had started a little magazine, and she didn't want to run it anymore. She said, Eric, why don't you take it over? So I did, and I published, I don't know, like 15 or 16 issues of Next Exit. And once I was an editor, there were all kinds of people who wanted to get in touch with me. Mm. And I made a point of not putting my work in every issue, but you know, maybe every fourth or fifth issue I'd stick something in. I got to know a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And other editors were saying, it's a do-it-yourself kind of message, you know. It's like, well, so they don't want me in their band, I'll start my own king band. I'm going to put something up on the notice board. Wanted a bass player and a singer. It's like, I have a guitar.
It feels like everyone is so overwhelmed, and it's kind of up to us to maybe start some different outlets. Because those poor magazines are just like, how can they possibly swim in these? They're just
I don't know. I mean, you got to trust that you're different, and you are. I mean, not in a bad way or anything, but like, we are both unique. And if you just turn that on and be your unique self, like, then you've got... Because we do have a serious problem with overproduction. And it's like, as if you think poetry is a market, it's like we're writing a whole bunch more poems that are going to fit out there. It's like people just don't spend a lot on poetry or read enough books of poetry. So we're all trying to elbow each other aside, and that's hard. Create your own venue, start your own thing, and be yourself.
Yeah, well, I do. I kind of agree with that. Mm-hmm. In the sense that, I think it's becoming increasingly hard for literary magazines to keep going. Mm-hmm. As kind of the DIY equivalent or master, it's Rob McLennan in Ottawa with Above Ground Press and all the other various things. And I think the genius of what Rob does is that it's very, the production values are low. Mm-hmm. He still spends a lot more money than you'd expect. But, you know, I think he provides a great service to people because of what he does. But believe in yourself and send your own work out. And, I don't know, read the guidelines. You know,
says the former editor.
Just read them. I wrote a lot of guidelines. I wrote a lot of guidelines to get around all of the various awkward questions that writers come up with. And be patient too. Patient and dedicated. And do it for yourself.
Yeah.
We are the first and the last audience.
I was trying to think of a way to say that. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You're the ultimate audience.
And be tough. Tough on your work. You know, when I was first sending out my gay work, I never knew how my poems would be read. I never had any certainty. I started sending out in the early 80s. And I thought, okay, I'm not going to let them fault me for my style. Like, they're going to be tight, they're going to be strong, and the only reason they're going to reject me, I mean, a lot of other reasons, but, you know, I dare them to reject the content. Not that the quality is going to be there. So, yeah. And I just never knew why work was rejected. I mean, you never do. But it was a worry. Every once in a while, I would hear things about submission. And it was as bad as I thought.
This has been a great evening and a great Q&A. Thank you both very much.
Well, thank you. Thanks all for coming. And thanks to Novel Idea.
Yes. Thank you, Novel Idea.
And it is 25 and a half minutes after 5 o'clock and begun just a few minutes after 4. You just heard from a November 13th book launch and reading event held at Novel Idea Bookstore. John Barton launching Compulsory Figures, his latest book of poetry, and also heard Eric Folsom, who was reading from his own work and also acted as MC that evening. And the event ran through now uninterrupted. So right now, before we move into the second segment of this show, my heartfelt thanks to all of you for tuning in to the show and to John and Eric for their wonderful readings and conversation. Again, it's about just past 26 minutes after 5 o'clock. You're listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC. My name is Bruce, and tell you what, let's do this, and we'll be right back.
Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast of Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
CFRC 101.9 FM has launched its annual funding drive to raise $25,000 to support station operations, news and creative programming, and upgrades to our recording and performance studios. You can make a difference. Visit CFRC.ca right now and make your gift. Get a tax receipt or sweet, sweet CFRC swag and enter to win our weekly raffle draws featuring gifts from amazing local donors. Thank you for your support.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could borrow a musical instrument free of charge, just like you can borrow books from your local library? We think so too. That's why the Joe Chitlin Memorial Musical Instrument Lending Library, also known as Joe's Mill, has been lending guitars, keyboards, saxophones, and many other instruments to the Kingston community free of charge for almost 20 years. We are a registered charity, relying solely on the generosity of our community to donate their time, money, and instruments to keep this amazing service alive. Find us at www.joesmill.org or Joe's Mill on Facebook for more information on borrowing instruments or contributing to Joe's Mill.
CFRC's annual funding drive campaign is now underway through December 31st. Help us raise $25,000 to support our local arts and artists and keep our community informed with local news, concerts, and event listings on air and on our website. Visit CFRC.ca today and make your gift to Kingston's longest-running broadcaster serving our community since 1922. Get a tax receipt via Queen's University or get sweet CFRC swag and enter to win our raffle draws featuring gifts from amazing local donors. For every $5 donated, you get one more chance to win. Thank you for your support.
And now, just a bit more officially, since we're all, back into this second hour, just a more standard greeting, I guess, and you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce, here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And again, thanks again for tuning in to the first, three quarters of this show. Quick reminder, and I'll probably do it at the end as well, but in case I don't get there, that both hours, I do upload both hours of this show each week to my personal blog space for it shortly after I get home. That blog space address is Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. They do remain there for 4 years. And one thing I want to do, I'm going to play the first song here in just a couple of minutes, but I'd like to do, since there are only a couple of weeks left in the funding drive, just a short blurb here, kind of a personal thing that I want to share before we move into the rest of the show. And I have some other announcements and also another song after the one that's coming up. So just want to mention, it's kind of hard to believe that we're moving now into essentially the final 2 weeks of the funding drive for this year. We're looking again to raise $25,000, and we could still very much use your support. Harder still, I guess, to believe that I've been a volunteer at CFRC for over 17 years and have produced and hosted Finding a Voice, this show, for going on 16 years. I've loved and continue to love doing it. It feels like home, like family. It's been a wonderful journey for me to share other poets and authors' work each and every week on a radio show. Couldn't have done it without the studios and the training and the guidance I've received here. They made a difference to me, and they're making a difference each year for hundreds of volunteers to pursue their own loves and interests here. So they also make a difference in this community and for what they both offer inside and outside this station. So I want to make sure that those interested in being part of CFRC next year or even in the years to come have that chance as well. So that's why I'm reaching out with you today, and just want to give my heartfelt thanks if you've already donated. And for those of you that haven't, maybe this is simply a little something you needed to remind you. And it's so easy. Simply go to the website, www.cfrc.ca, and go to the donate button at the top of the page, and you'll find with what opens up the reasons and what we offer and what we've done with past funding and what we plan to do with this and how to contribute. And you can either get a tax receipt or get gifts and get in the raffle to win a prize. So again, that my heartfelt thanks to all of you who have already donated, and every little bit helps. So thank you. And going to go ahead and play a couple songs off this same album today, but the first one is off of the 1994 Division Bell, Pink Floyd, with their song called Wearing the Inside Out. Here we go. Thank you. And again, you just heard Pink Floyd. That was off their 1994 Division Bell album. And I looked it up. I believe this was their 14th album that they put out. I have several minutes now to share a bit from... for some upcoming, I think I'm going to do submissions today just because I've neglected those a little bit. There are some coming up in December, and so I'm going to go ahead and go through these. And also, a couple of announcements, or one announcement as well. This first announcement does expire on the 18th, so it's expiring this coming week, midweek. And Kingston Writers Fest is hiring a festival director full-time. This is their media release, seeking an inspiring, growth-oriented festival director to lead, shape, and deliver their much-loved annual literary festival and related activities. It says, vibrant festival since 2009, Kingston Writers Fest has built a reputation for exciting programs offered in an intimate, inclusive environment. It also says, reporting to the board of directors and working closely with a team of contract staff and dedicated volunteers, the new festival director will match a powerful artistic vision with proven administrative talent. Again, this expires, applications close on December 18th. So for full information, go to their website, www.kingstonwritersfest.ca. And if you just / we are hiring, it'll take you right to the specific site. But if you at least get to the Writers Fest website, you will be able to find it anyway. So, and Big Pond Rumors, they have a deadline that's expiring December 31st at 10:59 p.m. Eastern Time. It is, they're accepting checkbook length manuscripts for publication in 2026. So they're looking for 20 to 24 pages of unpublished work as a whole. It says no AI or AI-generated poetry. For information, go to their November 1st post of this year in Facebook, I believe. Also, if you want to contact, here's contact information. Contact Sharon Berg, B-E-R-G. So that's sharonberg.author@gmail.com. So you can get more information there as well. Also, ARC Poetry is accepting poetry submissions in their fall submission period. That runs until December 31st, and then it's over again until April. So if you have anything that you want to send to ARC, go to their website for more information, arcpoetry.ca. Give you a direct link, /resources/general submissions. With the deadline of December 31st, Two Sylvias Press, a 2025 Wilder Series Poetry Book Prize, poetry contest. This is for women over 50. Prize is $1,000 in publication, print book, and 20 author copies. They're looking for book-length submissions, 48 to 80 pages, with a single poem to a page. Please read their full submission requirements at www.twosylviaspress.com/Wilder Series Poetry Book Prize. Again, December 31st. Modern Fuel Artist Run Center, they have a creative issue that they put out every year. Siphon is a magazine that they put out. They're looking for poetry, essays, creative writing, and more. From their site, this is a quote, Siphon seeks work for our upcoming issue called Resistance, a force that moves through communities, voices, and creative practices in response to the violence, oppression, and injustice shaping our world today. Go to their website, www.modernfuel.org/siphon. This is a little bit longer for this deadline, January 15th. Also, Rattle Chapbook Prize award includes a prize of $5,000, 500 copies, and distribution to Rattle's 8,000-plus subscribers. So it says, please submit 15 to 30 pages of poetry. And they say it's okay if individual poems have been published, but the manuscript as a whole must be unpublished as a collection. I would imagine, too, that they would want to know if those poems were published and where they were published. That seems to be the case most of the time. Anyway, you can probably find out all that information on their website at rattle.com/page/chapbook prize. And that too has a January 15th deadline. And maybe I'll do at least one more here. Craft 2025 Memoir Excerpt and Essay Contest. It says this is open to all writers, emerging and experienced, looking for previously unpublished creative nonfiction. 6,000 words maximum. For complete info and how to submit, it's a very long link. I would just say, I'm not even going to try to read this. It's over a line long on a typewritten page in small print, too. So just go to craft.submittable.com. And then look up submissions and or contests, and you should be able to find the Craft 2025 Memoir Excerpt and Essay Contest. And maybe I'll move over now to some events, because there's some kind of quickly approaching. Quirks of Human Nature is a monthly event, and their next one's coming up this coming Tuesday. It's a third Tuesday night of the month series by Meg Shermans and Meg Freer. The featured poet in this reading will be David Malone. Vocals will be Chantel Thompson. On bass, Michael Broadhurst. And bonus poets will be Carolyn Kenyons, Melanie Craig Hansford, Marinus Sorensen, and Lori Voss. Again, Deb Shermans is always on piano, and co-MCs Meg Freer MCs the event. What do we got for time? I think I can do. The Artist House is in Nottawa, and but I have listeners from up there too, and I like to encourage this event. It is a monthly open mic poetry series where they bring in a featured poet, I believe, all the time, which is the third Friday of the month, so that's coming up December 19th. But also on every Thursday of the month, they also have a weekly artist series. And I should say that the open mic runs from 7 to 9 p.m. on Friday evenings, so again on December 19th. So the one coming up this week, December 18th, the artist series is a Thursday midday series and runs every week. So that next one of those is December 18th. And then they're taking a two-week break. So then if you miss this one coming up, you're going to have to wait until January 8th for the next one. I've got another one that isn't Kingston either. The Lit Live Reading Series in Hamilton. I've been promoting this all the time as well. It runs at the Staircase Cafe and Theater on usually the first Sunday evening of each month, September through June. So they're meeting January 4th, 7 p.m. at the Staircase Cafe and Theater. I'm not sure that they have a website, but go to their Facebook page, Lit Live Reading Series. So there we go. I think I may better quit for now for that. And what I'm going to do is start to get ready here for some other things. You know what? I do need to do, because I didn't do any of these in the first hour, I've got another small set of things to air here first, and let me do this, and then I'll be right back.
Hello, this is Ellie Sturton, this year's Arts News Coordinator and co-producer of CFRC Live Sessions and Release Radar Reels on Instagram. CFRC is thrilled to amplify local artists and musicians on our airwaves and social media, and to provide opportunities for them to get the word out about upcoming local concerts and events. Local really does live here at CFRC. Help us keep the magic going by making a donation to the station today via CFRC.ca. And thank you for your support.
Hello and welcome to Salt Licht in Rapture. I'm your host, Nishan Tung. Salt Licht in Rapture is a sonic exploration of, to quote Virginia Woolf, violent waves of emotion. Featuring both known and lesser known musicians and poets, a special emphasis is placed on oddball, enigmatic, outsider artists whose work invokes dreamscapes and feelings of alienation, nostalgia, melancholy, existential unease, and yearning. Join me on Fridays at 8 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Partners in Mission Food Bank could not exist without the loyalty, dedication, and support of volunteers, some of whom have been with us for over 30 years. Our team of volunteers consists of individuals who continually devote both their time and skills on a regular basis in an effort to make a positive impact on hunger and the food needs of the community. Volunteering has no age limits. Your commitment and energy is enough. It is a great way to make new friends and contribute to your community. Partners in Mission Food Bank volunteers provide essential services in many ways, including assembling daily hampers, sorting food donations, breaking down and portioning bulk items, packing eggs into cartons, keeping the warehouse safe and clean, and providing helpful input to other volunteers and staff. Interested in volunteering with Partners in Mission Food Bank? Please call our volunteer coordinator at 613-544-4100.
And thanks so much for tuning into the show today. Quickly, please do stay tuned for 2 hours of East Coast Music, a show called Saltwater Music, hosted by Rob Carnell. To take us out of here, here he is again, off the Division Bell, and a song called Poles Apart. Here we go. Thank you for tuning in. It was all going to go so wrong.